This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Partly left natural on some facets and then sometimes carved and polished.
Yes, Noguchi always said that he kept going back to Japan because that's where he could be close to nature. And I think throughout his life in his sculpture, he always tried to use the natural qualities of the stone, let the stone be a stone, and use as little manipulation or intervention as he could to still show the hand of and the mind of a man.
Mm-hmm. One of them, the one towards the left, it looks like a kind of a diamond shape with different facets to it.
Yes, it's called reentry cone, and he did that in the 60s around the time of the heyday of the space program. He connected with social issues and movements of the day, and it's in the shape of a reentry cone of a satellite. So. Mm-hmm. It's made of red granite, quite a beautiful piece.
And it's hollow.
Yes, it is. It's actually three pieces that he put together. He did a lot of constructions with stone as well as carving of stone, perhaps influenced by work in Japan with paper.
Right. And inside there is one, it looks like a kind of big white, roundish, ovalish stone with very precise lines cut into it.
Yes.
It looks like a puzzle.
Yes. I believe you're referring to the piece that appears to be a figure wrapped in a white cloth. He did sculpture that was representational early in his life because he had facility for it, and it helped him earn a living to do sculptures of heads of famous people, and it got him to meet a lot of influential people mm-hmm. early on in his career. And he continued to work in a bit of a figurative manner from time to time, and that's one piece in that beautiful white marble.
Right. Just tell us, you know, what's going on at the garden. Why did you pick Noguchi this year?
Well, this year the garden celebrates its 50th anniversary, and we're so thrilled to have a year of programming that celebrates that connection with the community for this long time, and even more so our connection with Japan and the East. And we wanted to find this year artists to whose work represents the coming together of East and West. We feel that the garden has been a bridge between Portland and certainly our sister city of Sapporo, out of which the garden was first established. Ever since then, we continue to do things to build understanding between cultures, and we feel we're, in a sense, a kind of cultural crossing. Mm-hmm. Place.
And mm-hmm. and Noguchi himself had his father was a famous Japanese poet, mother was a woman from Los Angeles, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Noguchi was the perfect person to be kind of the centerpiece of our anniversary because, as you said, his mother was of Irish-Scottish descent, met his father actually in New York. His father was a Japanese poet named Yone Noguchi, quite a well-known poet. They moved to Los Angeles, and she served as his editor and translator. And Noguchi's father, Sr., left for Japan and left Leone expecting a child. She gave birth to the child in Los Angeles, and that was a difficult time. 1904 was not a time when there were cross-cultural marriages, much less out-of-wedlock situations. They were never married. She followed the father to Japan later on and was quite an independent woman, graduated from Bryn Mawr herself. So she educated and raised her son on her own with very little support from the father. Ended up sending him back to Japan at the age of about four, I'm sorry, back to the United States at the age of 14, wanting him to have experience in both cultures. So he grew up really living in both worlds and not really fitting as if he fit in either world. He was half Japanese and was accepted to some extent in the U.S. and to some extent in Japan, but always sought through his life. I think it was a conflict in his personality that led him to a very creative place in which he tried to find what the source of his inspiration really was.
And he learned carpentry, like house building carpentry in Japan, which ended up being quite useful when he was growing up in the States.
Yes, well, his mother decided to build a house and hired Japanese carpenters, of course, to build it. And then the story goes that she asked that Isamu, who was 10 years old at the time, be able to help. And so he had his first experience working with hand tools and felt always, I think, that that experience informed the rest of his life and his desire to work with his hands.
So he went off to medical school?
Yes, well, he went off to try to begin a career as a sculptor and was discouraged by his first teacher and entered then Columbia University Medical School, but that really didn't suit his personality, and he found himself then taking classes in sculpture and living in New York, of course, and coming upon an exhibition of work by Constantine Brancusi in the 20s, when Brancusi was at the height of the avant-garde modernist movement. And Guggenheim fellowship to travel. He was going to go all through Asia and ended up stopping off in Paris to visit the studio of Brancusi, and ended up getting an internship there with Brancusi, halfway against Brancusi's own better judgment. He liked to work alone, but Noguchi was quite a persistent young man and was then thereafter heavily influenced by Brancusi. He never got to the rest of Asia on that trip, and came back to the U.S. later.
And that started when he saw Brancusi's studio. He got a love for the way a studio should be,
mm-hmm.
and sort of influenced the way he ran his two studios, the one in Queens, New York, and the one in Japan.
In Japan, yes. Well, he also was very, very influenced by the simplicity of the lines of Brancusi's work, and I think it's clear to see that in Noguchi's own work. I heard a story just the other day that a young American wanted to at one point become Noguchi's intern, and Noguchi turned him down, and the young man said, "Well, but you interned with Brancusi," and he said, "Yes, and I spent the next 10 years trying to escape Brancusi's influence." So he felt very much that a young artist should pursue his own path.
Mm-hmm. I'm Joseph Gallivan, and this is Art Focus on KBOO Radio. Our guest is Diane Durston, the Curator of Culture, Art, and Education at the Portland Japanese Garden. She's here to talk about the work of Isamu Noguchi, the Japanese-American sculptor, whose work is showing now at the garden. Diane, you lived in Japan for 19 years,
mm-hmm.
correct? So you, if anyone, would understand the difference in aesthetics, the kind of Western approach to looking at an object and then the Japanese approach. So could you just tell us a bit, as a visitor who goes and stands over these stones and bronze pieces, what are we missing if all we see is just abstract lumps?
Well, the simplicity is certainly a strong element in the work, and the slight enhancement of the natural beauty of the materials he worked with. And those are two of the important elements of the Japanese aesthetic. There are many more, and there's a famous work by a man named Yoshida Kenko, who was writing in the 14th century, that illustrates some of the main principles of Japanese design that I think and art that you can find in his work. He talks about suggestibility, suggestion. The moon is more beautiful when it's half concealed. In writing, you don't want to reveal everything at once. In a Japanese garden, in some styles, you intentionally hide the next view to entice someone to walk along and discover the rest of the garden. Irregularity, things shouldn't be perfect, nearly perfect, but not perfect, because life and nature are not. Simplicity, of course, clean, simple lines are appreciated. And one that's very, very Japanese, perishability. If something, realizing that life is short and that you appreciate the beauty of it because it doesn't last forever. So one of my favorite quotes from Noguchi is that one should appreciate the moment.
The idea of craft and art not being divided the way they are here is central also to Japanese aesthetics.
Well, an interesting aspect is that there was really no word for art in the Japanese language until the 19th century. The word bijutsu was developed then. So there was no line drawn between what is high art and what is craft or design, and much of high art involved a high level of craftsmanship, so they overlapped and were not differentiated as strongly as they are in our culture.
Was bijutsu made up?
It's
derived from two other words.
Yes, bi is the word for beauty. Jutsu is the word for way or manner. So the way of beauty, if you would.
And that does that come out in his things like things he made for the home, you know, or his design work for
certainly does. He was a master craftsman as well as an artist to work with stone, particularly towards the end of his life, a lot with basalt. It's a very hard material without solid craftsmanship. It's impossible to create, so it's certainly manifest in his artwork.
Mm-hmm. Now, he was known for his garden designs, particularly one in Paris, which is very controversial.
Mm-hmm.
Could the UNESCO garden?
Yes, the UNESCO garden is quite famous, and one that was probably the single project that enabled him to begin to work in outdoor spaces rather than on individual sculptures. And he was very much interested in the idea of sculpture and its relation to the space around it. And so he began very, very early on to create what today we might call land art. He did a lot of outdoor projects. The one at UNESCO has some strong references to traditional Japanese gardens, but it's not traditional at all. He uses concrete in parts. There are references to Japanese garden conventions, but it was very much a breakthrough for him to have that project.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they thought they were going to get a traditional garden and then he surprised them?
Well, I think they thought his name was Japanese, and so that meant that he was a Japanese garden designer. And he then paid tribute to Japan through that garden, but he was insistent that it be a modern garden as well.
Right. You say you don't like to listen to music while you're working. You prefer silence. And
a lot of my work involves writing, and so any music with lyrics intrudes. But
yeah, you have probably one of the best offices in Portland because you open your door and you're out on the view. What's that section called? Where the
yes, on the veranda.
On the veranda.
Yes, I'm very, very fortunate to have one of the most beautiful settings in probably the world to work.
So you brought in a piece of music. It's by Mitsuki Dazai, and she's playing traditional Japanese music, and she plays at the garden.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hear a track. Thank you. That was Mitsuki Dazai playing Michael Hoppe's song called Maxi's Theme. What was the instrument she's playing?
She's playing a koto, which is a very, very traditional Japanese stringed instrument, a kind of zither that sits on the floor. What I love about her is, again, that she brings together a very traditional instrument, and she has classical Japanese music training with a new idiom. So this piece is a non-traditional piece and is quite lovely on an album called Far Away that we often play at the Garden, and she also performs at the Garden.
She does the moon viewing parties, and there's one September 18th to 20th this year.
Yes, one of the loveliest evenings of the year at the Garden are our moon viewing evenings. We have three nights this year in September, the 18th, 19th, and 20th, in which we sit on the veranda, listen to Mitsuki's lovely music, and watch the moon rise over the city. It's stunning and a lovely evening to enjoy her music.
So Noguchi, in Second World War, and many Japanese were interned in the West. Mm-hmm. How did he respond?
Well, Noguchi was living in New York at the time the war broke out, and rather than the Japanese, people of Japanese descent on the East Coast were not interned to the extent that they were on the West Coast. Instead of staying where he was safe, he made a commitment to go out to Los Angeles. He had driven out with his friend Arshil Gorky, another famous artist, and was in Los Angeles and asked to be voluntarily interned so that he could try to bring art into the lives of the Japanese Americans who were involuntarily interned at a camp that was in Poston, Arizona. And he stayed there for about 7 months, but unfortunately he found that, as with the rest of his life, he was not fully accepted there. Some of the people who had been interned were very, very suspicious for good reason, but what had happened to them was through no fault of their own, and so they were suspicious of that Noguchi had been planted there to spy on them. So he wasn't able to stay there very long. And, you know, just as with the rest of his life, not fitting in one place, not fitting in the other. But it was wonderful that he attempted to bring art into the lives of people there.
So his next 40 years, really, from the 40s to the 1980s, were this ascent. His career just got bigger and bigger, and he got more and more respected.
Yes, he did a number of public works, as I mentioned, these environmental public parks. He felt that there was a social responsibility for artists and wanted art to be part of people's everyday lives, so did a lot of outdoor work with a number of playgrounds, etc. In 1967 or 8, he had his first retrospective exhibition at the Whitney, and that was kind of the one of the apex of his career, I think.
68?
Yes,
so he was in his early 60s.
Yes.
So that was kind of a crowning glory, really, for any artist. Right?
Absolutely. And then until he continued to work till the very, very end of his life. He died in 1988. And had established these workshop studios in both countries, in New York, in Long Island City, Queens, and then also in a village called Murei on the island of Shikoku in Japan. And then he was determined not to see his work locked in the vaults forever of museums, and wanted to open his own spaces in which people could see his work forever in the environment he hoped they would be. So he has two museums now, one in each country, which is quite wonderful.
So he's pretty far-sighted and you know, well-organized and probably a bit egotistical to set up his own museum.
Well, yes, you could say egotistical in the sense that he had spent his life dedicated to art and had created so many wonderful things, and was not fully embraced by all of the critics of his day because there was no one kind of style or label they could pin on him. If you see a work by Alexander Calder, you always know it's Calder. He worked in one kind of dominant style. But Noguchi explored everything and was influenced by everything he saw and experienced. So the subtitle of our exhibition, We Are the Landscape of All We Know, he realized that the body of his 60 years of work was unique in the world, and he wanted to have it be in a place where people could come and not only experience the individual work, but experience the life of a real artist.
Mm-hmm. And he still has someone who he worked with in Japan, still runs his Japanese gallery or workshop.
Yes, a man named Masatoshi Izumi is in charge of the Noguchi Garden Museum in Shikoku, and he worked, his family owned a quarry, a stone quarry, and he worked as a mason and assisted Noguchi, was quite a bit younger than Noguchi, and continues today to be there and run the center there.
Mm-hmm. Does he answer questions if you go up to him and ask him about Noguchi?
If you ask him in Japanese.
If you want to go to a lecture about Noguchi, the Center for Architecture, which is on 11th Avenue in the Pearl District, are having a lecture on Thursday, May the 16th. It's from 5:30 to 7:30 in the evening. And Mark Tribe will do the lecture. It's called Isamu Noguchi, The Sculpting of Space. Presumably that's about architecture as well as sculpture. Do you know?
Well, Mark Tribe is a professor emeritus of the University of California, Berkeley, in architecture. He also wrote a book on Japanese gardens, and hence his connection with us. We have an international advisory board, and he's one of the members of that. To give you a sense of what he'll be talking about, I'm actually going to quote Noguchi himself. When the time came for me to work with larger spaces, I conceived them as gardens, not as sites with objects, but as relationships to a whole. If sculpture is the rock, it's also the space between rocks and between the rock and a man and the communication and contemplation between. So Mark's going to talk a little bit about Noguchi's life and work in that vein. And if anyone would like information, they can go to our website at www.japanesegarden.com.
Mm-hmm. And it's $15 or $10 if you're a member of the garden.
Yes, a member of the garden or a member of the Center for Architecture.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. After the lecture, the show will continue through July. Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for people who don't really know the garden and just want to come and take a look? Is there a kind of frame of mind or a time of day? Or
I think people who know absolutely nothing about our garden arrive at the gates and step inside, walk through the garden for an hour through 5 acres, 5.5 acres of 5 different styles of beautiful gardens, waterfall ponds, a strolling garden, a tea house, a sand and stone garden, and arrive at the pavilion to find the exhibition this summer, which is just a highlight to add to the garden, which is really our main event. The garden's beautiful in all 4 seasons, and when people leave, again, even if they know nothing of Japanese art and culture, they leave with a sense of peace and tranquility that they didn't come with, probably. It's a wonderful, tranquil space, and it's been a haven for all of us in the city for 50 years. Mm-hmm. So we welcome everyone.
Is it an exit through the gift shop kind of experience?
We have a very small gift shop, and you're welcome to stop there, but we just hope you come and appreciate the garden itself.
Mm-hmm. Maybe exit through the tea shop, because the tea ceremony is like a good way to consummate your visit.
We don't actually serve tea at the garden yet, but we have plans underway to make that possible in the future as part of a larger project that we're working on now.
Do you not still do the ceremony?
We do. Okay. People can come to watch that on the third Saturday of each month in the afternoon.
I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. This week, our guest was Diane Durston, the curator of culture, art, and education at the Portland Japanese Garden. Thank you for coming in and talking to KBOO, Diane.
Thank you so much, Joseph. I enjoyed it.
Next week, Ava Lake will have Sandy Rumagu, who is showing at Blackfish. Until then, good day.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
Have you heard about the Melting Pot Silent Mobile Dance Parties?
Silent dance? Doesn't sound very fun.
Actually, it's a lot of fun. Picture 200 people dancing with headphones to the same music. The Melting Pot Radio Show will have a series of silent dance parties from 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesdays in Portland parks and public spaces. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. For more information and this week's location, go to KBOO.FM/silent dance parties.
You're listening to KBOO Portland Community Radio. Yeah!
There will be a public comment meeting with the Public Utility Commission on the Portland General Electric rate increase Wednesday, May 8th from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at Jefferson High School Cafeteria. That's at 5210 North Kirby Avenue in Portland. That's on Wednesday, May 8th at 7.
The Seattle Police Department collected a little over 700 guns this past January after the school shooting at Newtown, Connecticut. City officials have decided to melt the guns and turn them into peace bricks that will be distributed throughout the city. Mayor Mike McGuinn plans to talk to students at high schools throughout the city about how gun violence has affected them and inscribe those messages on the peace bricks. Guardian World called into question the controversy with rapper Danny Brown as discrimination against men as victims of sex crimes. Apparently, a female got on stage, pulled down Brown's pants, and performed sexual acts on him. The media painted Brown in a damning light, though in this situation he had two options, as his tour mate, Kitty Pryde, described. Back away as he did, or kick her away, which would not have been received favorably either. Pryde condemned the negative attention in a column for Vice and said, "No one cares because a girl did it to a boy." Karen Gaffney, champion for inclusion of people with developmental disabilities, was awarded an honorary doctorate degree from the University of Portland during last week's commencement. She has Down syndrome. Gaffney is the first living person with Down syndrome to receive an honorary doctorate. She is the president of the Karen Gaffney Foundation for People with Developmental Disabilities. You can visit her website, www.karengaffneyfoundation.com. This is Desiree Garcia with KBOO News.
Have you heard about the Melting Pot Silent Mobile Dance Parties?
Silent dance? Doesn't sound very fun.
Actually, it's a lot of fun. Picture 200 people dancing with headphones to the same music. The Melting Pot Radio Show will have a series of silent dance parties from 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesdays in Portland parks and public spaces. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. For more information and this week's location, go to kboo.fm/silent dance parties.
Tune in Tuesday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. for The Melting Pot, featuring DJs, producers, and electronic artists from around the globe. Win tickets and stay up on events each and every Tuesday from 8 to 10 p.m. on The Melting Pot, right here at 90.7 FM KBOO.